This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, is the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't that
his name? Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the Big Buzz play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
fixing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Memorial Day Monday, here from the PTB Man Cave. I want to welcome you all in. Hope you enjoyed your long weekend and, of course, paid thanks and showed you gratitude towards the veterans and those who paid the ultimate price to defend our freedom, to have us sit here and talk about wrestling for hours on end. So, of course, we remember them here tonight with our episode. Looking back into the inside of the Vintage Vault, of course. And before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my PIC, the man who I saw this past Saturday and delivered me a wonderful gift. Mm-hmm. Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. It was a special day. Every Memorial Day, at least since 2010, I walk in our city's parade with my Knights Council, and it is nice to see all the veterans and. Police, firemen, and similar jobs where your life is on the line every day. As a matter of fact, while we were walking towards the end of the parade, a kid on one of the Babe Ruth Baseball League floats fainted and fell off it. So you know, the ambulance came in and you know put him in, and he was fine. But yeah, it's one of those days where you look back and you know you'll watch it on Raw later. Vince obviously will do his annual opening piece. Vince, very patriotic, as we all know. So I hope if you were able to today, you were able to go to your town's parade if they had one. Not all towns do. And just remember, we could be in a country where we don't even have TVs or the ability to buy one, much less a computer.
Seven
of them, yeah, and much less do a show about something, that people in the Ukraine don't even understand. So, but it is
we
a pleasure, JR.
Listeners in the Ukraine. I think you're typecasting there.
I don't think anything's plugged into the Ukraine at the moment. Or
we apologize
anybody's at their
to anyone
homes.
In the Ukraine that may be listening.
Well, if you are listening to Ukraine, you're very, very lucky and your windows haven't been shot out or something. So, but we wish you all the good luck and prayers going on over there. It is episode 314 of the Place to Be podcast. And it was hot today. What'd you do this fine week? Well, obviously Saturday I saw you. We were at the Silverback's house for his annual shindig. Mm-hmm. I gave you a fine gift of Narragansett Dell's Shandy, quite cold and quite delicious. How'd you enjoy the rest of your weekend, sir?
Oh, not too bad. I think I updated on last week's show that the dryer was giving us some trouble, and we ended up going out and holiday weekend sales, so we ended up buying a new set. So that came yesterday, and you always hear people complain about delivery people that don't show up on the schedule time, like they come late. They say 1 to 3, and they come at like 5.
Right.
I've been having the opposite problem lately. These guys have been coming early,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't bother me. If you don't give notice, it's really a ballsy move, right? Because they didn't even call me. I was outside cutting the grass at noon. They had given me a 1-3 window, and they just show up in the truck with the stuff. And I was all caught off guard because my dad was heading over, and we were going to disconnect the old gas dryer. We were going to take it apart. And so it wasn't done yet, and they can't do it unless you pay to have a licensed person come. And I was not paying $200 to have a guy disconnect and reconnect the gas. So I'm caught off guard. I don't have anything out or anything ready, so I had to go digging through, getting wrenches, and the guys try to kind of walk me through it and help me out. But you can only do so much. I'm kind of holding the dryer with one hand, and I'm wrenching it with the other, and I pull the thing off, and the dryer fell, the old one, and I caught my hand on the like the vent. And sliced it open like Ahmed Johnson in 1997, right across the palm there, or like right below my pointer finger. So that hurt like a bitch. So I was like, you know, bleeding, gushing blood as they're finishing up, and I barely even remember anything they did. They just left, and I was in there trying to treat my wound. And the rest of the day was yard work, and then we went over to my sister's, and today we just had a relaxing day at home. We didn't do anything for once.
Oh, okay,
it was a nice break.
Does Coventry do a parade?
I don't think they did. There were a few around. There was one in East Greenwich, East Providence. There might have been Cranston, I think, too. But
I would think Cranston does one because they do the one for the – well, that one's for the St. Mary's Feast. So that's not technically a holiday. But not all towns in Connecticut do, Norwalk. I know my hometown, West Haven, does. I think my mom went today. But yeah, it was a nice, relaxing weekend. It is kind of unofficially the start of summer. Officially or scientifically, summer doesn't start till June 21st, but felt it today. It was very, very warm, very nice. So, you know, it's funny, JR. Last night I was at the doctor's house, and we were just kind of perusing through Netflix, and the doctor's daughter was trying to find something she wanted to watch, and sure enough, she's like, "Oh, this looks like a fun show," and it turned out to be Saved by the Bell.
Very nice.
So she's watching that from scratch, and I said, "You know, Miss Bliss," and you know, I'm like, "This is a tough season. If you could gut your way through this one, the show gets much better."
Well, she should go ahead and read Jen Angle and Mize and Chrissy Ryan with "We Missed the 90s, Saved by the Bell."
Yes, that's right. Week. That's right.
All right, why don't we dive into Saved by the Bell? Here, yes.
Yeah. Save. Speaking of.
Hey! What is going on here?
Well, season one, you were about 400 pounds lighter, and definitely a lot more hair. That's for sure. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, guess who's finally come back.
Well, someone did.
What is this, about as good as the early delivery guy?
I don't know.
Ugh.
Hold on.
All right.
Hold on. I think I got it.
Uh-oh.
The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny. The weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost souls.
Undertaker.
Rock.
Kurt Angle.
Rock.
The Undertaker.
Kurt Angle.
Tonight,
I will strike down.
And he will
strike,
upon thee with great vengeance
and furious anger.
And furious anger.
You will know my name.
You will know.
And you will know my name
when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
My fate.
Destiny.
And you will know he is the one when he lays his vengeance upon thee. And now
we go to the review.
Yes. I believe that quote was, because it's at the beginning, I think it's Ezekiel 14:26, something like that.
Ezekiel Jackson 14:26.
Ezekiel Jackson 14:26, exactly. And then Sam, and then I'll quote, misquoting or quoting Samuel L. Jackson, of course.
Yes.
From, Fiction. Tonight, from the Vintage Vault, here on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you probably one of the most unheralded secondary pay-per-views in history, Vengeance 2002. I didn't realize after watching it again last week, JR, how much I really love this show. It's so good, and you and I in past past shows have waxed vainly about the main event, but I tell you, rest of the show is pretty solid all around. You got a couple of dogs, but not a lot, though.
Yeah, I didn't remember much about it, and I feel like it's kind of a forgotten show.
It definitely is.
Before what would be a great show that we'll get to next week and coming off an interesting King of the Ring, kind of a weird time in the company. Again, a lot of upheaval in these weeks since King of the Ring. And the change was in the air, and this is a show that kind of flies under the radar. So we got a few things to take care of here before we get into the show. Let's hit the championship roll call in the transfer center, and then we will talk about the big changes on the top of each show.
Okay.
So here's our champions. Undisputed champion, still The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. Intercontinental champion, still Rob Van Dam. Our tag team champion, Scott, Edge and Hulk Hogan.
What?
Had defeated Billy and Chuck on the July 2nd SmackDown from the Fleet Center, Boston. Now, was that... I thought that was actually July 4th.
It's well, Steve, it aired on July 4th.
Okay. So he gave us the... I wasn't sure if Stephen provided the air date of the tape.
Yeah, that was the tape date. And, of course, a very momentous evening, JR, because that was the first time since the 1993 King of the Ring that Hogan came out to Real American.
That's very true. And they
He went back to... Voodoo Child, or whatever that weird version was that's on the network.
Yes.
It was close, though, right? If you listen to it?
Yeah. Close. It's just a mock-up.
Yeah, it's a mock-up.
Yeah, he would go back to that and for the rest of his run here in 02. Hogan, that was a really cool moment, him and Edge winning the tag titles. Hogan, I never won the tag titles.
Nope.
That was pretty cool. Billy and Chuck's run kind of ends a little anticlimactically. Well, it was a cool ending, but a very weird reign for them.
Yes.
Like, they were like the least dominant team of a tag division, you know, like they were the kingpin since March, but they didn't really feel like it. They had that stupid blip to Rikishi and Rico, and now they lose again here. They don't even make it to this pay-per-view, so kind of a weird run for them. In retrospect, it seems like they're around a lot longer than they actually were.
Yeah, and we've talked about how the tag division was a little, we were talking about it with Kevin last week, that the tag division was a little shaky.
Mm-hmm.
And not, it was and it wasn't. It was very weird, but, when we talk about the actual split, the tag division towards the end of the year is pretty awesome on one show and 50-50 on the other. But for now, we have one tag team champion, and it is, of course, Edge, who's this is what? I think it's his 9th or 10th. And for Hulk Hogan, yes, his first. And he never won it anywhere. They say first time ever in WWE history, but he's never won any anywhere. He never, obviously, never won at the AWA, and certainly teaming with somebody in WCW? Hardly.
Unless it was Dennis Rodman.
Yes, exactly.
Cruiserweight champion, Jamie Noble still. Women's champion still, Molly Holly. So this is actually one of the quietest months. We did have a new European champion, Jeff Hardy, defeated William Regal on the July 8th Raw from Philadelphia.
Yep.
So not too much action for the major titles on this month, finally quieting down. The hardcore champion was Bradshaw, defeated Johnny Stamboli on the 7/15/02 Raw from East Rutherford. TV milestone, Scott, during this stretch here, SmackDown surpassed 150 episodes.
Yeah, wow.
As we move along. Transfer center, Shawn Michaels, came back, as we saw with King of the Ring, went to Raw. A major injury that we'll get to as well, Kevin Nash tore his quad and would end his run here for quite a while. Wouldn't return to early to mid-03. We have a couple of debuts we'll talk about. Another note here, 7/20/02 is the first ever joint house show since the brand split. It was in Serena, Ontario. Sunday Night Heat, I guess we'll get to in a minute, right? You want to do the...
Yeah, we'll do the setup first.
All right. Thank you, Stephen Sutton.
All right. Thank you, Stephen Sutton. Pleasure as always.
So why don't you say... actually, I guess you want to touch on the other business before we get to the show itself, too?
Why don't we... well, if it doesn't affect it directly, why don't we touch on the other business?
Okay. Well, we have two new general managers. Because when we last left you at King of the Ring, we talked about the merging of the company under Vince McMahon with defeating Ric Flair on Raw for sole control of the company. And he didn't want to run the whole thing on his own, so he named two general managers, one for Raw, one for SmackDown. He also announced that the rosters are going to be wide open, and wrestlers were now free to sign with whoever they desired. This would lead to weeks of jumps by various stars until Vince announced that the rosters would lock as the year progressed. Before we get to the GMs, did you feel that already cheapened the draft that we're in July?
Very much cheapened. It almost felt like it didn't exist.
It made sense in a way, because they're like, well, we're changing now who's where. We'll let you jump and go where you desire, but it felt like, okay, why do we go through the whole draft 2 months ago for just opening things wide open again?
Right. Yeah, no, it was a total waste of time. And Ric Flair's probably like, thank God no one will remember that draft, because boy, did it suck. So,
well, we had a good 3 months of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
New general managers, the week of July 15th. We'll go to SmackDown first, which actually came second chronologically, but Vince chose his daughter Stephanie. Now more mature looking, a little bit less whiny. She was the boss on Thursday nights. For Raw, Vince's choice came completely out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose Eric Bischoff.
What?
To be the general manager on Monday nights. Of course, Bischoff had begun his wrestling career in the Minneapolis area, doing sales for Vern Gagne's AWA. Eventually, he would take over the main announcing duties for the last 2 years of the AWA was in business. When the promotion closed, he moved to WCW, where he worked his way up the announcer food chain, and was shockingly promoted to executive producer, edging out Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone. He would help create WCW Monday Nitro in 1995 to compete with Raw. And for the next 5 years, Bischoff's lone goal was to try and put the WWF and Vince McMahon out of business. He attempted to do that by luring away big-time stars like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, and with guaranteed big money and lighter schedules. With the New World Order storyline started in the summer of 96, WCW began to dominate the Monday night ratings for close to 2 years. By 1998, when Steve Austin exploded and the WWF took over the war, Bischoff was too busy buddying up to Hogan, Nash, and watching his company cave into itself. He would be let go in late 1999 in favor of Vince Russo. Bischoff returned for a short stay in 2000 and would eventually try to buy WCW in 2001 with a partnership with a company named Fusion. The deal fell through, and AOL Time Warner refused to keep programming on their network, and they sold WCW to Vince McMahon for significantly less money. Bischoff has been out of the limelight up until the 7:15 Raw at New Jersey when the unthinkable happened. We had a backstage segment where Bischoff randomly walked by a shocked Booker T and forcibly shook his hand. After the commercial break, Vince McMahon came out and announced Eric Bischoff was the new GM. In a moment for the ages, they hugged on stage, and Bischoff cut a lengthy promo plugging all of his accomplishments and promising to shake up Raw with ruthless aggression, which had become Vince McMahon's catchphrase. He would immediately institute a few changes. The first was moving JR and King from ringside up behind by the entrance ramp, just like the old Nitro setup. And Lawler said on air that back in the 90s, Vince used to wish death on Eric Bischoff, and now here he was. One other note is Stephanie McMahon decreed that it was not fair that they didn't have full representation of the pay-per-views in the commentary booth for SmackDown, so that the show would be split between Michael Cole and Taz and JR and King, but in a move that made zero sense, Scott. They do the first half of the show is Cole and Taz, and then King and JR do the second half. Made no sense to me.
No, why didn't they just do what they would eventually do down the line?
Well, actually, I think the next month they already start.
Do they do that? Which is have Taz and Cole do the SmackDown matches and have King and JR do the Raw matches.
It's like they couldn't figure out the logistics of it, of having them all at ringside or something, like having two tables.
What, they couldn't afford a second table?
I don't get it. It's like, why would this make sense on any world? You're having guys that don't watch the matches, call the story. It made zero sense at all. So what did you think of the GM revelations?
Stephanie, at first, I didn't get, because she had only been back on TV for, what, 2.5 months? And already we're supposed to be like, oh, I like the I'm all grown up. And it's like, you've all grown up. You've only been 2.5 months. You're still
right,
a
yeah,
woman.
I know. We're supposed to just think she's like the suave businesswoman now.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was just a waste just to put her back on TV. I think that kind of was. I also thought that was supposed to somewhat enhance the Triple H storyline, which we'll talk about later on in the show. As for Bischoff, I'm trying to remember. I don't think I knew ahead of time.
I don't think it.
I don't remember being on. I was very loyal to Lords of Pain at the time, and I don't remember it ever being on any websites or Wrestle.
You're right. I don't think it did leak until they showed it. Did you like that they showed it before the commercial?
No.
All about surprises. You don't give a shit about business, huh? I think it was a shrewd business move, though.
But the show was free. What would it have mattered? It
because you're getting people to tune in. Different. Now you're getting the ratings bump. I see that. Say you're not watching Raw. Say you're off watching Frasier or something. I see Eric Bischoff talking to Booker T. I jump on my phone. I'm calling you up because texting really wasn't in yet.
Yes.
I call you up, especially for you. I call you up and say, Scott, Eric Bischoff's on Raw. You say, well, let me pause Niles here and hop on over to TNN.
Eddie was a cute dog, damn it. No.
I mean, I can definitely say that was... You know, Andrew Flanagan, who's a wrestling fan on and off, during the hot periods, he didn't watch Raw religiously, but I'd always call him when something big, or IM him, when something big was about to go on, and he'd tune in back in like 97, 98. So I think it's definitely a shrewd move. Because what's the surprise get you? I mean, I guess people could still call and say tune it on, but now you're giving them 2 minutes to get prepared and get fired up and get the rumors swirling.
That's true. You're right. I guess I'm thinking more like a fan. You're right. Yeah, from a business perspective, yeah, it definitely would have been. It definitely was a better move to spike the rating. And in terms of him being there, for this diehard WWE fan for many, many, many years, it was pretty delicious to see him have to sit there and now be just a simple employee.
Well, I thought it was a good move because he's actually a really good performer.
Oh, he's an absolutely good performer.
Like, he was great in that role. So yeah, well, I thought it was.
He's a built-in heel. Yeah, you know.
I don't think there's many guys that could have picked better than him for the job.
No,
and as we'll see
not.
Over the next 3 years, he does a great job in that position.
Yep.
The one thing that people were upset about, and this I get on board with, is they didn't care for the hug. They thought they pissed away what could have really been a money angle out of the gate by having them embrace on stage and kind of put all that behind them. I think at the time it was a very valid complaint. I think as the weeks went on, when you know they became more, they had issues with each other, and it didn't really erase anything. It was more like Vince kind of being sly with the hug. It wasn't really meant to be that they're buddies now. So it wasn't meant to be.
I forgive you. It was more like ha ha ha, I just buried you.
Right. I think initially it was maybe I could see the thinking, oh man, they really blew this by having them hug. Who wants to see them hug? But I think long term, in hindsight, looking back, it didn't end up really mattering.
No, it didn't matter. I think the fact he was on the payroll and the fact that he was there, I think is just poetic justice. That's ultimate victory. That was the coronation. You know, like the victory was.
Was it really that bad for Bischoff, though? I mean, he's getting paid now by the guy. He could have just been left out in the cold and never get given a job. I mean, if anything, it kind of showed the respect he had.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't really complete shitting on Bischoff. It's like he hired him to work in the office or, you know, make copies with Kevin Kelly or anything. He was more, he was actually brought in and given a prominent TV role and I'm sure a decent pay. So
that would have been funny. Imagine your boss is Bruno Lauer.
it could have been a lot worse, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
So it's not like a complete out-and-out burial. Yeah, it's probably embarrassing for Bischoff after all the shit he talked for years to have to come work for Vince. But, I'm sure he got a good deal and he gets a prominent spot. And, he had to do some embarrassing things, but he also got some good moments as well. So
I think we'll learn
over the next 3 years that Bischoff was a guy that could deal with his, payback, a guy that could have a good sense of humor about himself, a guy that didn't mind being a team player. And I think it changes the perception a lot on Bischoff over the next 3 years of what kind of person he was.
Yeah, I agree. I think he realized business is business. I tried as hard as I could, and I lost. So why, worm away to nothing?
Right. Why come here and pout?
Yeah, why come here and be a pain in the ass when, you know what? I know what's good for business. Vince got me. So I might as well go in and, lick my wounds and help elevate myself and the show. So I think it was a tremendous move, tremendous business. And Vince is probably thinking, hey, this guy, he's a pain in the ass and I wanted him dead. But now I look at it, pretty valuable. He's a valuable heel. He knows his stuff. He could help. I don't know if he ever got any true creative, not power, but
right.
Input.
I'm sure he lended a word here or there. I don't think he had any kind of substantial say, but.
Right. So overall, tremendous move. And as we see the way Raw shakes up by the beginning of 2003, he becomes very valuable to Raw. So SmackDown's a little different. SmackDown, we'll find out by the time we get to 2003, but we see a lot of it definitely in the fall of 2002. Raw and SmackDown become two very different shows.
Which was the intent, which makes it good, I think. Yeah. I mean, to me, this ends up being one of the few stretches. Maybe we see 05 a little bit and again in 08 kind of a little bit. The only other times to me that it was as separate as it becomes in 02 and early 03. Like when they have distinct, very distinct styles and personalities in each show.
I agree. Yep. I agree.
Let's dive in.
July 21st, 2002. Live from the Joe Hockey Town, Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan. Last time we were there on pay-per-view JR, Steve Austin was hit by the Crown Vic at the 1999 Survivor Series. Your attendance, 12,000. Buy rate, pretty good, 0.94. And your announcers, good old JR Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, Michael Cole, and Taz. You mentioned Sunday Night Heat, JR. What do we have?
First we had the regular domestic version. So Goldust defeats Stevie Richards. On the international version, we had D'Lo Brown defeating Crash Holly, Matt Hardy defeating Raven, and Goldust defeating Sean Stasiak.
Okay. All right. Let's dive in. Now, here's the weird part. Again, Michael Cole and Taz at the desk for the first probably four matches, I think, even though they had no idea what any of the Raw storylines were going on. So, all right, your first, our first match, our opener, is a gimmick match involving a tag team. A tag team that of a guy who was not supposed to be in tag teams anymore. And a pretty badass tag team, let me tell you. And the way they work together in this match is amazing. Mm-hmm. Bubba Ray Dudley, who was supposed to have his solo moment on Raw, now teaming with his little brother Spike to take on brutal tag team of former Intercontinental Champion Eddie Guerrero. And in his first pay-per-view match since breaking his neck at the 2001 King of the Ring, Chris Benoit. And this was a tables match.
And Benoit ended up being out about a year. I remember thinking it wasn't going to be that long at the time. I think his Austin came back shorter than a year, because remember he came back in September. So yep. I think I remember being pretty surprised that Benoit didn't come back until the end of June here.
And he had the same kind of surgery.
Right. So he was out for 13 months.
Yeah, the surgery where you go through the front of your neck, through your under your collarbone and through the back. And a lot of wrestlers would have that kind of neck surgery.
So Benoit had been drafted to SmackDown, but made his on-air return on the 527 Raw in Edmonton. He'd be in Eddie Guerrero's corner for a portion of Latino Heat's match at King of the Ring against Ric Flair. Benoit wanted revenge on Steve Austin for injuring him the year before and blamed Flair for stealing that opportunity by driving Austin out of the company. Bubba Ray came to Flair's aid on Raw, so Benoit and Guerrero turned their aim on the Dudley brothers to take out their aggression. So,
there's just one problem here.
Yes.
Chris Jericho broke his neck. That's the move that broke his neck.
Oh, yeah, remember. But the storyline was that.
I know, but I mean, I know, but I just, Steve Austin broke my neck.
All right, Schmuck, let's move along here. Bubba was back. Bubba was back to doing his usual, right back to pushing the tables and working the tag team with Spike, and his singles push already down the shitter. A guy that they had pretty high hopes for coming off the draft as a singles player in the upper mid card, all the way down, back to just an opening match tag. Did you think Benoit should have been moved into a higher level storyline coming out of the gate, or did you think this was good to kind of ease him back in?
No, I think this was fine. This was fine. The main event situation in the upper mid card was pretty solid at the moment. So I was fine with this. He's got time, plenty of time. And, you know, since both rosters are not set in stone yet, this was a good I think this is one reason why I like this pay-per-view so much, because it just seems to have so much kind of unique changes and kind of cool stuff going on, because they are kind of in a state of flux. So I was fine with it. You got to, you know, again, you can't just be like, everybody likes Benoit, so let's just rip up the main event and stick him in there. You know what I'm saying? You can't do that. The main event was in a fine situation at the moment.
Right.
And his time will come. So I had no problem with it. And I love this match. The problem, let me talk about Bubba Ray for a sec.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba Ray's problem was, what was the difference, the pointed difference, JR, between Bubba Ray and D-Von when they split? What happened to D-Von on SmackDown and what didn't happen to Bubba Ray on Raw? D-Von became a completely different gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Changed. You saw Bubba, now D-Von was the Reverend, he had Deacon Bautista, completely different. He was no longer the guy from Dudleyville. He was a completely different gimmick. All Bubba Ray was the guy who doesn't have a tag team partner anymore. That's why I think his solo push was in the shitter. Not because he didn't try hard enough, but because you look at him and he's just not, you know, all right, he's Bubba Ray Dudley. Okay, now he doesn't have a tag team partner. Whereas D-Von was given a whole makeover and had a whole different character on SmackDown. In my opinion, that's the difference.
I think that's a big part of it. No doubt.
Yeah.
I also think the D-Von, I think part of it too was they didn't put D-Von into angles, or I don't think they looked at him as a guy that was going to get a decent push. So
right.
I think he sat right into the lower mid card, and I think Bubba was meant for more, and he didn't reach it, and he ends up falling back to kind of where D-Von was. So I think the expectations were higher for Bubba.
Yes.
But Raw was a weird spot. A lot was going on, weird things on Raw at this point. So Benoit and Eddie dominated early on. I thought Cole and Taz did a really nice job here telling the story of Benoit's comeback and bringing all the information. They noted that this is the same arena that the Radicals had debuted in back in January 2000. Very good double teamwork. Benoit and Eddie kind of stabilized and energized the mid-card. Dominant performance until Spike flies in to break things up. I thought there were some innovative saves here from the table spots. A good breakdown brawl at the end. And I was very surprised in this finish. I was shocked they didn't have Benoit go over here. The Dudleys do go over and win the match. And like you said, it was a hard fought, a very good opener. I like the table teases. They didn't overuse a table breaking. They only used it towards the end. But again, really surprised that Benoit and Eddie took the loss here.
And they, for the first, I mean, this is a good size match, almost exactly 15 minutes. And for the first like 4 or 5 or 6 minutes, they beat the crap out of Bubba Ray and Spike.
Yeah. Yep.
They just systematically dissected them. And I like how Eddie kind of changed. I've just loved him in this stretch.
Yeah.
Because the Latino Heat China thing from 2000 is kind of gone. And now he's kind of like a radical again, like Benoit
he's just a dickhead.
And Dean was in 2000. He was just ruthless.
Yeah, he's a dick. That's all.
Yeah. He pretty much was. And it's fantastic. And Benoit is back to being Benoit. I was kind of surprised But again, I think it goes back to the whole Bubba Ray. We need this guy to get a big win or else he's just going to be a flop. And
I think they figure probably because it's the tables, they're not pinning Benoit Guerrero. They're just getting put through tables, and the Dudleys are masters of the table anyway. So I don't think it hurts them in any way.
No.
It just surprised me to see Benoit lose in his first match back, basically.
Mm.
His first pay-per-view match back.
Yeah. No, I was surprised at that as well. And I didn't think Spike had much of anything going on anyway, So that was kind of strange. But they do win the match.
I mean, this elevates Spike in a way, too. Kind of gets him back into things.
Yeah, big time. Big time. In fact, I look back at our original review, and I feel like I undergraded this match a little bit. I think looking back, I think I would definitely bump it up a half grade or so, maybe even a full grade to maybe a 3. I had it at 2.5. I think maybe I'd put it at 3.5. I think that's how good it was. I just think it was a great story. Bubba Ray and Spike fighting their way back after getting just pummeled for the first like 6 minutes and then fighting back and getting the win. So I just love it. Told a great story. It told a great story. Did the right team win? Yeah. In hindsight, no.
Well,
but at the time,
like I said, if they got pinned, they would have been more egregious. But the fact that they would just went through the table to me was made it okay.
And obviously they needed, if they had Bubba, if they were putting so much into this, he needed to win this match, or his team needed to win this match. So.
Before our next match, we go backstage and we have Eric Bischoff's pay-per-view debut. He's talking to Coach, and the brands are battling for Triple H, who hadn't decided yet what brand he was going to go on. Eric is very nervous that Triple H is headed to SmackDown.
Yes. Well, I believe it was in this segment that he said he was talking to Triple H and he's feeling good about Raw, and then Triple H walks over and goes into
Stephanie's
office. Yep. So, yeah. All right. Next up, we have our first title match of the evening. The Cruiserweight Championship is on the line. Your champion,
the Cruiserweight champion, right here.
Yeah. Your champion, as we mentioned earlier, is Jamie Noble. Great gimmick. Good champion. Love Nydia. I loved Nydia. Taking on a former Cruiserweight champion from earlier on in the year, and of course, former WCW Cruiserweight champion, and one of my favorite workers, Billy Kidman, without the fleas. This is a good match. Enjoyed it very much.
Mm-hmm.
Kidman got a pin on Noble in a tag match about 10 days earlier on the July 11th SmackDown.
Will you find the Hurricane quickly being kind of phased out of the
yeah, Cruiser division? I did.
I thought he was meant for... with that gimmick, he was meant for other kind of storylines, I thought, more than being... I leave this to the true Cruiserweights at this point.
Are you a Kidman guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I always liked Kidman. I'm not a huge fan, but I liked him.
I enjoy his matches. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I thought he was a nice stabilizing force over these next couple of years in the Cruiserweight division. I thought he was always someone you could throw out there and be pretty sure you're going to get a good match out of him. I thought they're really using the depth of the division here. And Noble, now kind of the centerpiece heel, and they're giving them a champion that they can chase. Kidman reversals and his quick offense frustrated Noble. Noble uses Nia to turn the tide, acting like a good heel, and that would become his calling card over the next year or so. He's using her to help him in these matches, throwing her in front of his opponents and hiding behind her and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yep.
A nasty arm breaker on the floor. I don't know if you caught that move when he took over control thanks to Nydia. He snapped him down on the floor. Yeah. Noble focused on the arms. Again, slower pace, but I thought this is much smoother and more cohesive than the King of the Ring match with Hurricane. So I didn't mind the slower pace here as much. Cole and Taz pimps Rey Mysterio's debut. He'd be debuting soon on, they'd be doing a vignette for him on TV, and then his debut at SummerSlam as well would be his first pay-per-view.
Yep.
So he'll be coming up in the next couple weeks here. Kidman, I thought, was great selling the shoulder and really one of the most underrated pickups. Like, I know you asked me a minute ago what I thought of Kidman. I thought he was a very underrated pickup as part of the buyout of WCW.
A guy
you might not have thought would be, you know, anything special here, but they really used him well and helped use him to rejuvenate the cruiserweight division. Kidman misses the shooting star press. Noble hits a tiger bomb and got a nice clean win. This is a fun match, well worked, and a better example than King of the Ring of a mat-based cruiserweight match. You know, we're not getting the high-flying stuff like we had with the luchadors, the lucha guys in WCW. Instead, we're getting more mat-based stuff. But I thought these guys told a much better story and made it work a lot better than Hurricane did with Noble. And I thought Noble was a great choice to run this division for a while.
I concur with you 100%. I'm a big Kidman guy. Probably because even though he is a cruiser, he doesn't look like one. Like, Kidman looked bigger than he was. And he was probably, what, 212, 213?
Well, he was definitely bigger here, too. I mean, he was taller than most cruiserweights in WCW.
Right.
But here, he's bulked up. He's clearly bulked up for WWE.
And he executed a shooting star perfectly.
He
hit the flip right, landed right. Obviously, he missed it, but it's still, he landed flush. Just a tremendous match, really is. Very well paced. Both guys are just busting their tails, and obviously, as you could tell, and good job by Cole and Taz to really put it over that you really are going to see the true work rate on SmackDown. They were really putting that over, and obviously talking about Ray making his debut soon. Obviously, that had been talked about for a while. There was really no secret there, but they were just one of those Time Warner specials where Vince was just waiting for it to run out.
Right.
So he actually needed something to sign. So there you go. Jamie Noble retains the Cruiserweight Championship in a very, very good match over Billy Kidman.
Mm-hmm. Backstage, we get a little tease, Scott. Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar cross paths, and Brock teases that he'll be coming after him for the title of SummerSlam if Angle were to win tonight, and Angle warns him not to get involved in the match.
Mm-hmm. And we all know where those two would, what path those two would go down. Already you're feeling, well, not already, but definitely feeling Brock as something very special.
Oh yeah.
And it's the fact that he's in a backstage skit, and I mean, we'll talk about his match later, but at least here I feel like he's, you know, they're definitely, he's got his spot set. So it was a very good insight in that backstage skit. All right, next we have our second title match of the evening, the European Championship on the line. Your champion, as we mentioned, Jeff Hardy, who won the title a couple weeks earlier, taking on the former champion, the master of the awesome black and red tights from Blackpool, England, Mr. William Regal. But JR, since our last pay-per-view, Jeff Hardy's had an interesting month or so.
Yes, he did, Scott. In July, he started a feud with the Undisputed Champion, The Undertaker. Kind of based on respect, culminated in a legendary ladder match on the July 1st Raw from Manchester, New Hampshire. And, Scott, I was there for that match.
Yes, you were.
Me and Charlie Houle were there. And
Charlie.
I think Adam Murray was there, too. We drove up and we hung out at Charlie's house, and then we went to the show, the Verizon Wireless Arena. Two times, Hardy was a legitimate fingernail away from becoming the champion. And after that loss, Taker showed him some respect. He handed stuck out his hand. They shook his hand. Kind of a chance to put over Hardy, and something we'll see later as well in this show. Put over Hardy as kind of a future star and a guy that should be looked at as a true threat to the world title. It was an awesome match to see live. And even though I knew it really would make zero sense and Hardy probably wasn't going to win the world title, it was just booked well enough that you thought they may do something crazy. And I think what had helped was all the freaking title changes that had been happening this year on Raw and all this other crazy stuff going on month to month on pay-per-view. It seemed feasible they would do it to try and bump a rating. So it was a great match to be alive. I really, really enjoyed it. Kind of one of my forgotten, when I make my live moments I've seen throughout the course of my life, that's one I always kind of forget about. And then when I remember, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was really freaking awesome to witness live.
No, and JR and King were amazing in that match.
Yeah.
When JR's just yelling out, you know, make yourself famous, kid, make yourself famous. I mean, it was watching it at home was just as crazy as you being there. It was insane. And you know what? I think this was the moment where we can finally, I don't want to say forgive The Undertaker, but at least finally shake off the last 14 months of nonsense. And now Taker's back to being Taker, you know, and you know, when he comes back in the ring and he, you know, he's about to knock him out and he's looking at him like, you know what? You're just crazy enough to earn my respect. And he pats him on the head. And so that was the King. That was crazy. Probably one of the most memorable moments in Raw history. And mm-hmm. I think it's on one of the two ladder matches. So ladder match DVDs.
I think it's on one of the Raw DVDs too, though.
Yeah. Best yeah, stuff. Most likely.
Yeah, so Hardy would defeat William Regal on the 7-8 Raw to win the European title. That actually changed times a few times. DDP had defended at WrestleMania. We've talked about this kind of with Steven Sutton's notes, but Regal defeated Paige on the 3/21 SmackDown. Spike Dudley defeated Regal on the 4/8 Raw. Regal won it back May 6th, and then Hardy beat him on July 8th. So European title really bouncing around here. Regal, after he had lost it to Hardy, cried in the ring. And yes. He wanted his favorite title back here. He was very upset about it. Nice rub again for Jeff Hardy. Stock is super high coming off the Taker match.
Mm.
Hot crowd here is all over Regal right from the get-go. Hardy, his paint and the colors and the hair was crazy out of this point. Really stands out. But to me, I thought it kind of hurt him in a legitimacy way. Did you agree?
I agree. Yes, I do. I feel like he looked, I don't want to say trashy, but he just, I don't know. Yes. He had that kind of, you know, Malden Mass Kowloons kind of look. You know, it's very like he didn't have like gone were the arm band things or the, you know, the cut strips or whatever the hell they are.
Right.
And he just had on a tank top. He just looked very like, I can't afford tights, so I'm just going to show up like this kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And that I think that did hurt him. And then as the year progressed, you start to see him kind of change into a less reliable worker.
Right.
You know, things start to creep into his system, if you know what I mean.
The hair and the paint definitely did not kind of lend him to a legitimate push. Regal uses early offense, trying to end the match quickly, counters all the big spots, but Hardy kept coming back using a flurry of kicks. He would, you know, use straight kicks, he'd use his jump kicks, his spin kicks, and that was his offense pretty much in this match. Regal's mouth is bloodied because it's not a Regal match, unless something's
or
bleeding.
Either his mouth or his nose is bleeding, yeah, pretty much.
Hardy ends up stealing the win in a nice match. Regal controlled, but Hardy stayed just close enough to him throughout and ended up stealing it at the end. Could have gone a bit longer, I thought. Nice flow, good chemistry, and then Regal cries again at the end of the match.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't a big fan of Regal. I know he's trying to put over that the European title was like really important to him, but I thought the crying was a little goofy.
A little over the top, yeah. I agree. So Jeff Hardy retains his European championship with were you surprised the length? Barely 4 minutes.
Yeah, and they had a lot going on in the show, so I get it. But I definitely thought they could have maybe used another couple minutes here in this one. But I like the story. I like how Hardy, you know, hung in, and he was always kind of right there. And as soon as Regal gave him an opening, he got the roll up and pinned him. So I kind of liked that story within it, that he was just hanging around just enough until Regal gave him the opening to do it. So
right,
I thought was pretty well worked. We go backstage again, Scott. A lot of backstage activity on the show. Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair are jiving, putting over Jeff Hardy. Kind of goofy. It was, I don't know, the way they were talking was kind of funny. The Gratham yes. Hardy comes over, and they talk about how he's the future. And again, more of Hogan just being completely outside the box of what he was in WCW, legitimately putting guys over backstage, not in kind of the fake way he did at times in WCW.
I think that segment too, JR, was meant to kind of be like, oh, look at the two legends on the screen at the same time. And they both acted kind of weird. They both acted like they had been doing shots or something. It was really funny. But good segment nonetheless. And I tell you, JR, Hogan's just getting an A-plus from me this whole run. Just so awesome to have him back. You know, it was really fun. It was fun to have him around.
And part of what they get into here as well is they're worried about Bischoff and Stephanie as GMs, worried about the young guys getting screwed by this power struggle between the two. So I thought that was kind of cool too, kind of hinting that there may be issues to come. Right. These two GMs, you know, fighting over who's got the better show and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Worried about guys like Hardy getting lost in the mix.
Mm. Yes, I agree. Okay, next up, what would end up being a, not really a history-making match, but a moment in history for it would be the pay-per-view debut of a guy who, at the time, you're just thinking, some new dude. But would end up becoming the modern-day version of the guy we just saw in the skit before. Chris Jericho, who we've been saying kind of after Mania, but kind of floating around aimlessly and, you know, didn't know what really was going on, taking on the first of what would be, well, I guess second, of what would be the unbelievable Ohio Valley Wrestling class of 2002. Mm-hmm. The first one was Brock Lesnar. The second was this man. And then the third would actually be on TV.
I think he already may have had
been. I think he already may have been on TV already.
We don't see him on pay-per-view for a while. And then there's another couple guys that come in early 03 as well that were part of that class that we'll get to.
Yep.
But go ahead. His name?
Okay. His name is John Cena.
Get used to it.
be a lot of him.
Kid from West Newbury, Massachusetts, eventually will become the Hulk Hogan of the 21st century, many would say. Started his career in UPW promotion in California using a robotic gimmick called Prototype. He was a UPW champion for about a month in 2000 before the WWE signed him, moved into Ohio Valley Wrestling, where he held that title for 3 months. His debut was on the 627 Raw when he answered Kurt Angle's open challenge. He lost to Angle, but then pinned Jericho in a tag team match in the July 9th SmackDown when Cena was teaming with Undertaker and Jericho was teaming with Kurt Angle. Jericho was not pleased and was looking for revenge here. This is all part, like you said, about the youth initiative that they were pushing, a push by Vince, the ruthless aggression. That was his big catchphrase over these few weeks leading into the show.
Yep.
He wanted people to impress him and come out and show that they wanted to take control of the company and win Vince McMahon's praise. And Cena was one of those guys that came out and made a name for himself by pinning Angle. I mean, not losing to Angle, but pinning Jericho on TV. Jericho was frustrated by Cena, tried to use a chair before the bell. Cena uses it instead, then the bell rang. Cena had a great look, but not much of an initial reaction. I don't know if you agreed with that, Scott. Did you think kind of quiet for him, even though he's coming off some pretty good TV stuff?
Yeah, because I don't think... we were at the stage now where... We weren't quite at the stage yet where the audience... I mean, the internet was, in terms of wrestling, was still... I mean, people kind of knew what was going on in OVW, but... Unless you lived in that Louisville, Kentucky area or that Southern Ohio, Northern Kentucky area, you really didn't know much about OVW. Mm. So, you know, this isn't like Ring of Honor or, you know, TNA, but, you know, like those kind of promotions where you've heard of these guys and people have gone to local shows. And unless you live in that Louisville area and you know what's going on or the Southern Ohio area, you have no idea who half these guys are. So I think they just saw this kid, you know, this John Cena, good shape, incredible physique, short hair and kind of nondescript tights, nondescript boots. And you're like, oh, I know some young kid. And, you know, he's, you know, it's more, I think the storyline was more Jericho was just losing his grip than up and comer, you know, trying to steal a spot. I think the storyline originally was in reverse, but little did they realize what they had on their hands here.
Yes, exactly. You know? I agree with you. I think Jericho, frustrated and, like you said, really kind of losing control of his career here at this point. Cena dominated till he made a rookie mistake, gives Jericho the chance to slow things down and take over. Jericho, basically the story here is that he's upset a rookie would even have the balls to challenge him. A very basic match. Cena looks like he belongs, doesn't look lost, but I can't say he's, you know, overly impressive. He's hanging in, taking all the big moves. Y2J gets cocky, doesn't take the pin chance after a Lion's Halt, and then Cena reverses the walls for a win in a nice finish. You know, very good on Jericho to come in here and put this guy over, but I don't think Jericho needed to be in this spot. I think he should have been higher up on the card. They could have used someone else here. I mean, he did the right thing, but it didn't have to be him. Jericho throws another tantrum, which becomes a running theme lately on this on these programs. You had Regal crying. Christian's been throwing temper tantrums, as we'll see on TV. And Jericho throws one here after the match.
Right.
And again, Cena looked like he belonged, didn't look in over his head, but not someone where you would think was going to be a major star down the line. I mean, I don't think you could have seen that right here.
No, absolutely not. If anybody says to you, oh, this guy's going to be the future of the company, you're shoveling it. There's no way. I thought, oh, this guy's kind of cool, and you know, maybe he'll hang around, and maybe he'll, you know, hook up with a tag team or something like that. But again, 2002, the landscape was very different than 2000, say 2007. You know, when other guys would come in and join the company in 06 and 07, because at the time, Ring of Honor would have been 5 years old. It had a longer, a wider reach, and people had heard stories about the Punks and that kind of stuff. We'll get to those guys down the line. But my point is, in 2002, we knew that OVW was, you know, the AAA of WWE, but unless you were on websites, Lords of Pain and The Rick and what the hell is it? Online Onslaught and, you know, yep, those other sites, you know, Scherer and those guys and Keller. You really didn't know who any of these guys were. Who's the Cena guy? I don't know. He's down in Kentucky or something. Oh, all right. Well, that's kind of cool. You know, you weren't like anticipating these guys coming up yet. And another guy would come up from OVW whose name you would recognize more than John Cena. He sadly would suffer an injury that would kind of stunt his ascent. Mm-hmm. But somebody had an eye on him, if you know what I mean, and was ready for him when he came back. So later on in the year.
I don't do any tricks.
And you were not one of them.
That would have been awesome if he was. I know Ruthless Aggression, Vince.
with a pink polo shirt. What do you have on your iPod? Okay. So there you go. John Cena in what would be win number one, JR. Looking forward to doing you and I looking forward to doing that final record?
No. Well, yeah, because that means it'll be over. But
yeah, but it'll also mean we're going to have 12-year, God knows how many years worth of matches to count. But all right, so John Cena gets the upset win. All right, let me ask you then. I mean, you don't need a specific answer, but I didn't really think about somebody other than Jericho. I mean, who else could you have put in that spot? I mean,
I got like Test.
Yeah. What are the good heels? Well, you could have picked two other heels. Who? It's hard to say. I know. I'm not putting you on the spot or anything. I'm just saying. You said to Jericho. I thought maybe you had a guy in your head.
No. I just thought he deserved better.
Yeah. But I mean,
guess I would have said like Lance Storm or Christian, but you had them elsewhere.
Yeah, we have them. Yeah, I had those guys in my head too.
Jerry, Regal. May use Regal there instead. He might have fit.
Yeah, you could have skipped the title match, maybe put it on Raw the next night or something. Yeah.
I'm sure they could have found something. I just thought Jericho, it was just sad to see him drop as precipitously as he did. To see who's in the main event and see Jericho right back to where he was a year ago.
Right.
It was just kind of sad. Mm. We go back outside to Stephanie's office, where Bischoff is still there. Stephanie's attorney shows up with legal documents, making Eric very nervous. We go back out to the arena with a commentator swap. Mm-hmm. And this guy, you mentioned this too, it was very awkward. Kind of a stupid setup. So JR and King come out, and Taz and Cole are kind of there, and Taz holds out his hand to shake King's hand, and King is very hesitant of it, like really weary. Like what's he going to do? I don't know. It was very odd. Did he think they were going to jump them? I mean, it was...
Yeah, and Jerry's looking at him all quizzically. It was really stupid. Yeah, they didn't think that out very well at all.
No, the whole thing was very, very weird and very awkward. And I think by the next... When do they move King? Are they there by SummerSlam? We'll have to see. I think by SummerSlam, they started doing their own individual matches, but I'm trying to remember when they moved King and JR up to the back. I think on Raw, they already were. I'm pretty sure that happened right away. Like,
yeah.
Bischoff's second week, they were in the back.
Yeah, maybe they're... Is it not till their singular pay-per-view?
Oh, maybe.
Till June?
No, because June? I think at... I definitely remember, like, at Survivor Series, they were separate.
They were definitely at...
It might be by SummerSlam.
Okay.
Well, Mania was special.
Well, different case. You're going to stick them in where it was. You're
right.
Stick them out in the middle of nowhere. So, okay. Next up, was there a skit? Were we backstage again?
Nope, or that was
right to the next match. Okay. Yeah, they so we switch over. We thank Cole and Taz, who I thought were pretty good.
I liked it. Yeah, I thought they did a very good job. They were very good storytellers. They had good chemistry. Neither one of them was pulling any kind of rank or seniority. Like, they did a nice job just kind of sharing the duty. And Taz was really getting a nice groove, being kind of the color guy that set up the story and set up the, Cole would set him up with nice questions, asking about moves and psychology, and they'd get even better over the next year. But here, I thought it was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, no, definitely. I just thought it was executed just hideously.
Of course, yeah.
So bad. All right, next up, we have our next title match of the evening as the Intercontinental Championship on the line. Your champion, as we mentioned earlier, is Rob Van Dam, taking on... In a rematch from the King of the Ring tournament final, Brock Lesnar. And I still, you and I talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
You had to give him, well, let me think about this. He did have the backstage skit with, you know, the little segment with Kurt. Did he have to be in a match on the show?
Brock? No. That's a good... I actually haven't thought of it that way. No, I would say he didn't have to be.
I thought, you know what would have been cooler? If he came out during the main event.
Right. Sat in a commentary. Cool.
Yeah, sat and just observed. And then dropped somebody.
Or you could have given him somewhere else that he could have beaten. Maybe they could have even played up that it was kind of a tomato can by Heyman. Setting him up to get ready for the main event.
Right.
Rikishi is a guy that shows up later they could have probably used.
Goldust
they could have used here for that spot. They could have found someone for Brock to just beat the shit out of. The feud has been good. They just booked into a corner here because RVD is the IC champ. They're not going to bust up Brock's. They're not going to have him lose into SummerSlam. I always thought the title shot was on the line, but it wasn't, right?
No, it was for the IC title.
I always thought that the Brock's.
No, you may be thinking of the Shelton thing from a few years later.
So it was clearly going to be an obvious fuck finish. I mean, there was no doubt about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, RVD was not going to pin him, and what was Brock going to do with the Intercontinental title?
Right.
And it makes no sense.
I mean, I guess you could have maybe seen that happening. We do like the old, he comes in an IC champ and tries to win hold both belts or whatever. But I thought they could have handled the matchups much better on the show. Let RVD move on, kind of get back to his winning ways. They could have found, I think this is another one, they could have split different matches up earlier and mixed guys up here. I mean, even like Bubba, if you don't do that tag match, you could use Bubba to put Brock over. Maybe do a quick one-month feud with them on Raw. That's an impressive enough win that they could have used.
Or like I said, I think the best idea would have just given him the show off and had him sit at ringside during the main event. I think that would have been pretty cool. A good harbinger of things to come. The match is...
Really? I liked it, actually. I liked it better than King of the Ring. Lesnar and Heyman, I thought their entrance swagger has gotten really awesome at this point, where Brock just strutting down and Heyman kind of, snarkily behind him.
Yeah.
JR pushes that RVD is not afraid of Brock because he went toe-to-toe with him at King of the Ring. Mm-hmm. Brock was cocky early, shrugging off RVD, who used the speed and knowledge of Brock to outwork him. Every time he got hot, Brock would just hit a power move to slug him down.
Yeah.
Very good fast pace back and forth. Every time, again, ended by Brock's power. The crowd was really hot for RVD, of course, a hometown crowd. Brock uses his beer hug to wear him down, work in the midsection, and at this point, to me, is when it clicked, much better than King of the Ring. The crowd was rocking for the comeback. RVD counters an F5 and hits a 5-star, and to me, that was the closest Brock has come to a pinfall so far in his career.
Yeah.
It was on that 5-star. And then the only thing I didn't like was the finish, where Heyman pulls the ref out and gets a weak DQ.
And just gets a DQ out of it. Yeah, yeah. That was pretty.
I would have liked it a lot better if they did something stronger, either a chair or just something more vicious than just Heyman pulling the ref out.
Right.
Very good match. A terrible finish. I thought they should have at least had RVD. What if they went the other way, where RVD gets desperate and uses a chair and just gets DQ'd? They could have done that, too. Because he knows he can't beat him. RVD gets a somersault senton off the top to the floor to get his heat back. He tries to Van Terminator, but Heyman blocks him, and Brock hits a muscle buster and an F5 on the chair. A really long post-match brawl, and I thought they did that to maybe make up for the screwy finish, kind of give the fans another few minutes of brawling. Feud should definitely be done now. Brock has to go on to bigger things, and RVD needs some rehab.
Yeah.
Good showing, though. I like this match. It was much better than I remembered it being. Watching it the other day, I was actually pretty impressed. I didn't remember it being that guy. I think I was always pissed off about the booking, that they put themselves in this position. And so I was always kind of angry about it. But looking back, it was actually, I never gave it enough credit.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And I think I thought the match was definitely a little better than King of the Ring. I was expecting a little more, but at the same time, I was not even expecting a match at that time. But
all right, let me ask you this. So we're a year into RVD's run.
Mm-hmm.
What grade are you giving it? He debuted in July of 01. Here we are in July of 02. A guy that came in, should have had a rocket strapped to him. We're here a year later. What are you grading his first year in the business, in the DOTF?
C+. Maybe B-.
Yeah, so C+ feels a little low because he was so good early on. And it's really only been since, December-ish that he's been kind of meandering. Yeah, probably B-.
B-.
I'd say a D for wasted potential.
but great matches.
We haven't seen many stinkers out of him.
That's good. That's when you look at it for brass tacks, if you're looking at it right down to bare bones, his matches have been fantastic.
Are we running out of time with him as far as striking? To make him worth ending?
As we see soon, they try. So, they do give it a shot in a couple months. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, but was it too late?
No, I don't think so.
Was the one that's coming up, I guess we'll talk about this, was that his last chance?
Maybe. maybe his last chance to be a guy, a long-standing guy, instead of what he would end up getting, what, 4 years later or 3.5 years later?
Right.
That was just kind of like a, you know, a legacy thing.
Yeah.
Rather than a foundation thing.
Right. Not something they were looking to.
Not something they were looking at. Something they just wanted a cheap pop for that moment in time. And, you know, obviously we'll talk about when we get there. Yeah. This, I think that was probably his last chance to be a legit main event guy. And I think that's when all the bitching and whining starts, which I'm sure will be very well documented when we, as time progresses. But in 12 months, B minus.
Yeah, I think it's about fair.
Yeah, B minus. All right, we're backstage again.
Yep, there you go.
And Bischoff still chewing his fingernails, correct?
Yep.
Waiting to see what was going on.
Yep. Stephanie comes out of the room.
Now, well, earlier did we mention this earlier? I just want to confirm this earlier on. Did you mention? You mentioned the lawyer, right?
Yeah, he went in.
You did mention him. Okay, I just want to make sure. Yeah.
So now Stephanie comes out, and Bischoff's kind of gloating, and Stephanie says, Hunter signed. Hunter comes out. Bischoff berates him, tells him, why'd he do that? He should have came back for a counteroffer. What was he thinking? And Hunter tells him, it was my divorce papers.
You ass.
He says he hasn't made up his mind yet for which show. Did you think, I mean, even for you, Scott Criscolo.
Yes, sir.
Was this a little bit much stroking for Hunter? That, like, Bischoff was this desperate to sign him to Raw?
Yeah.
I mean, I know the whole thing was... Well, yeah, I know the whole thing was Bischoff had never had him in WCW. He'd always wanted him. That's the whole how they played it up. It feels like a little bit
much. I think the whole thing in this part that bugs me is 2.5 months ago or 3 months earlier, he was ecstatic to get rid of her. And now, 3 months later, suddenly, oh, God, these damn divorce papers. Like it was right. So, like... He should be, like, you know, having a party. Instead, he's, like, walking out all... Those are my divorce papers. Well, I mean, you know, we all were happy to see her. You get rid of her. I don't know that. I think that whole part was just a little blown up. And, but I think this is where you start seeing the. And I'll talk more about this, obviously, throughout the next several vaults. I think this is where we start getting the. Look, guys, all of these other main eventers are, you know, are gone. Triple H is a guy who's we can rely on because he's here all the time. He's invested in this company and the future. It's time, you know, he is the main event now, or one of them. And so we need to, you know, I mean, was it a little more than we needed? Yeah. Yeah. But I will say this though, JR. I do think that, and this is not a Triple H thing I'm talking about. This is more Bischoff. I think the whole thing of him being kind of inexperienced into how this company works. Mm. I think the fact he's like, well, I guess Triple H is supposed to be really good. Maybe I'll get him on Raw. You know, like he's kind of not knowing what the hell's going on. And then they get into it in the segment later. But that segment was just death. But we'll get to that in a minute. I think the whole Bischoff not knowing what was going on and kind of like, you know, being a little clueless was most of it. And I think Triple H is just the guy that was there. But it was a little much. I admit that. It was definitely a little much. And the divorce thing, nobody cared. I think it was just to kind of make Bischoff look like an asshole more than anything else.
Yeah, that's all it was. To show that he was obsessed and it backfired. And I think it was also to wrap up. To
finally shut the door on that.
Well, yeah, I think they're trying to find a way to have Stephanie be on TV and not be acknowledged as Hunter's wife. And you know what I mean? Like, I think they're trying to find a way out of all that. So this was wrapping that up and allowing them to split up and move on. And Stephanie just become the face GM of SmackDown instead of... Still the bitch, you know, separated wife of Hunter.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So Bischoff realized he acted like an asshole, but at the same time, he was still a little confident. So, all right. Next up.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
Yes, this guy. And we're going to be hearing that a lot lately. Not that we do. We've heard it plenty of times already. We finally put to bed... What seemed like a pretty cool idea back in February.
Yeah.
Booker T. Taking on the Big Show. And finally the coffin slams shut on the New World Order. Why don't you let us know, JR, the epitaph, the epilogue of the New World Order.
Undergone some radical changes since the spring. Kevin Nash shocked everyone introducing Shawn Michaels into the NWO on June 3rd. The next week, Michael super kicked Booker out of the NWO, citing a new tough love policy. And joining Michaels is the first NWO member who had never wrestled in WCW. The NWO slowly started to lose momentum and members as X-Pac could be released from his contract, and Big Show was super kicked out of the group by Shawn as well. I believe that happened at the Manchester one I was at. Michaels and Nash set their sights on recruiting Triple H into the NWO, basically saying, hey, we're just going to bring back the Click. On July 8th, Nash returned to action on Raw as he teamed with Eddie Guerrero, X-Pac, and Big Show against Chris Benoit to battle Booker T, Goldust, Bubba Ray, and Spike Dudley and Rob Van Dam. A few moments after he tagged in for the first time, Nash ran across the ring and tore his quad off the bone. He was immediately back on the injured list, and NWO now seems to be running on empty. The following week, Vince McMahon came out to the ring to the NWO theme and proclaimed that the group was finally officially disbanded. It'll be the final mention of the NWO as an entity on WWE TV. The Nash injury would become a running joke among internet fans as the injury-prone star tore his quad literally just by running. The NWO had a Ballyhoo debuted in February, but the whole idea just seemed destined to fail from the start.
Mm.
Booker had actually defeated Big Show on the July 15th Raw, but Show choked Sandman through the announce table after the match. That July 8th with Nash tearing his quad, was that the same night as the infamous the Trish
awful July match? 8th? Yes.
Right, so that was
Let me confirm.
I have it right here in front of me.
Do you have it with on Graham's site, History WWE?
So it was in Philly. Yes, that was the... So this was a pretty infamous night. This had Nash tearing his quad. It had the awful, awful Bradshaw-Trish versus Chris Nowinski and Jackie Gator mess of a tag match. And that had Jeff Hardy winning the European title as well. So a pretty memorable episode of Raw there from Philly on July 8th, 02.
Oh, Philly. Oh, God.
Just Nash
of
tearing
all the cities to have that match in.
Nash tearing his quad and... the awful tag match was just...
of all towns.
Very funny.
Seriously. Of all cities.
So, quite the mess. Scott also, we haven't really mentioned him. He was on a few shows in 02. X-Pac's the last pay-per-view match. I've been back at SummerSlam 01. Do you have his all-time record in front of you there?
I do.
21-25-1.
Yes.
So, a pretty hefty amount of matches.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the draw.
You had to do this to me.
You knew I was going to say something.
Yeah, when the hell did he have a draw?
Something in 98, maybe?
Yeah, was it one
of
those?
I think it was early. It was early.
Was it one of those DX Nation things, maybe? Well, this counts as 1-2-3 Kid Run as well, don't forget.
Yeah, well, I thought that myself. I'm like, was there something happened maybe in 95?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Mm.
Was there any of those DX Nation matches go to like a double schmatz?
Maybe.
Well, according to some reports, he was set to feud with and eventually lose to Booker T, but refused to lie down. X-Pac has since denied this and claimed a botched spine buster gave him an injury to put him on the spy lines. The apparent resistance to jobbing combined with an incident in an airport where he collapsed for what was reported as unknown reasons led to X-Pac being released on August 25th, 02. He would bounce around various indies and had a stint in TNA, eventually become most famous for his relationship with China. The two made a sex tape and also had a well-known confrontation when China was a participant on VH1's reality show List of Real Life. Waltman was tossed off the show when China refused to reconcile with him. He eventually checked into rehab, reportedly funded by WWE under their current wellness policy. And I don't think he's a true agent right now, but I think he helps a lot with the training and stuff now that his friends are all in power there. But
yeah, he's probably down in Tampa, I would think.
Yeah. A guy really synonymous with the new generation and the Attitude Era, kind of petered out here in his last year and vanishes in mid-02. So.
Mm.
Part of the whole changeover. Landscape is really changing here in late 02 into early 03, and he's quickly become kind of an artifact of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Best matches? Well, definitely the Bret match from 94.
Oh, yeah, the Owen match from King of the Ring 94. And they had a good one on Raw a couple weeks after the Bret match.
Yeah, what was that really good one he had in 98? Like in the fall. Was it D'Lo?
No. Yeah, he had some good matches with D'Lo.
He had some good match with D'Lo in late 98.
Good match with Owen at King of the Ring 98.
Mm-hmm.
In 99, he had a really good match with Triple H at Backlash.
Yes. Yep.
Some good stuff with Kane as a tag
team. Matches. Yeah.
So he's had a good run and been a good character. You know, a guy will miss. He had, his debut was the upset of, one of his third official match, I guess, was the upset Razor Ramon on Raw.
Yep.
93, we had a good tag match with him and Holly against Bigelow and Tatanka. If you remember back in 95, at the 95 Rumble.
Yep.
Had that one there, too, so... he'll be missed. I thought he could have worked well if maybe he got a little bit of a character makeover and could have blended into the cruiserweight division maybe here. That was kind of being reborn. Could have been cool to see him work with some of these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea too. So, but obviously he had other issues he had to fix. So
yes.
Bummer. All right.
NWO is dead, Scott.
What's that?
NWO finally dead. I like how Vince came out and buried it one last time.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, they gave it a shot, but by the end it was barely recognizable, and it was, and you think it could have worked if they just made it the click, if Triple H did go and it was him, Shawn, and Nash, if Nash didn't get hurt.
That would have been so awesome.
Put that on the Kevin list. I'm really curious if they were going that way until Nash got hurt.
Okay. All right, question number one.
And we'll see. I mean, we'll talk more at SummerSlam, but I wonder if Triple H was going to be with Nash. With Shawn doing, you know, something else, but... Or Shawn ends up coming back because Nash got hurt. It's a lot of questions around there.
Yeah. Okay.
So Booker pretty much officially a face now that the NWO is gone. Big Show's back to his old music. No more NWO music. Kind of an odd match to make no DQ, no count out, I thought. Not a match you would look at on paper and say, oh, yeah, this could be a nice brawl. Playing off their recent matches against each other, Big Show chucks Booker around. A lot of power moves. They're continuing to try and reboot Big Show as a monster yet again. Booker uses a chair to stop the assault, but Big Show just swats it and continues dominating. Not a great fit for Booker's style, I thought, initially, but he kind of made it work. Uses some plunder to even it out, bashes Big Show with a monitor and a scissors kick through the table. A lot better brawling, better than you would expect it to be. Booker's on fire, kicks apart Big Show to block the chokeslam in the ring, and busts out his old Harlem hangover, dubbed the Houston hangover here, for the win. A really impressive clean win for Booker. Turns the corner as the face, kind of sets him up for a push, and another sad loss for Big Show.
I like that finisher. I wish he used it more.
Yeah. Well, it's like it was. I think it was when he broke out in like big spots when he really needed it, and that was it here. I like this brawl, though. It was way better than I expected. I thought this was going to be a mess, but they worked pretty well together. Booker, a guy you don't usually see in garbagey matches, fit in well here, too. Again, Big Show, just 2 steps forward, 15 back every month for him. So another clean loss here, and Booker advances on with the win. Did you like this brawl? Did you think it was... surprisingly good.
It was surprisingly good. Yeah, I think I would grade it a little differently when I watching it again. I don't know what to do about Big Show anymore. I mean, at least in a couple months they figure something out.
Yeah,
even if it's a short window. But why do you think it is? You think he's not? Here's my take. I think maybe it's just age, but he just doesn't look as impressive. Like when he was in WCW in 96, 97, he was in good shape. He was like big.
Well,
like
he's a little bit
big.
Fatter
now. Just fat big.
And I mean, I think part of it too is that we're used to seeing him lose. You know what I mean? Like, of course he's not intimidating because we've seen him lose a lot.
Right. Yeah. I think that's part of it too.
It's kind of like a pitcher who's, you know, still the same guy, but you don't have that intimidation factor anymore because he's blown a lot of games or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he's. Like, you know, one I hate to use is CC Sabathia. Like, you know, he looks like the same CC Sabathia. He is, but because he's kind of been, you know, pegged now, he's mortal and gives up a lot of runs. He's kind of, you don't look at him the same way as you used to.
Killing you, I know, but it is. Guy. Anyway. So, but Booker wins, and now he finally may start to. But the best part about this, not only from a work rate perspective, is now he can. This sounds so weird. Now he can finally be with. Yes, very tepid. But
well, it's like
you wanted them to bust out, and really, now that Booker's a face, you know that like some hilarity is about to ensue.
Yeah, it's like we just had to wait for them to finally do it, and they finally did. Like the NWO thing just felt very forced with Booker. It was good to see them move past it quickly and let him go do what he can do best with Goldust. So, yeah, I was excited for that.
Yeah, I was too. So there you go. Booker T wins, moves on. Big Show loses and moves on to whatever his next loss is going to be. All right, why don't we take a break, because we got a very long segment coming up, and then we have, two more title matches. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about soon. Two title matches and a very very long in-ring segment. But first, a word or many. Because!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show, each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick. With over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith Blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Say your prayers, it's so long. Don't forget my son to include
everyone. Alright, Nation, we are back in the midst of reviewing Avengeance 2002. We'll quickly take a respite, talk about PlaceToBeNation.com. We have the debut of a new podcast today, Scott.
Yes.
The PTBN Sports Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Morissette, Andrew Flanagan, Chad Campbell. Talked about UFC 173. They looked at the AL East in baseball, the NBA draft, lottery, and more. This is a nice counterpart to your Extra Point, which also had its new episode up last night. Mm-hmm. You and Dr. G looked at the Redskins controversy, the lawsuit with the NFL and the painkillers, and you talked a little bit about Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice compliment because you and G look at kind of the overarching stories. You look at the big picture stuff. I liken your show to like a local drive sports talk show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Roger and Andy and Chad are going to be more of the, numbers never lie, kind of stats-based. They're going to take a deeper dive into issues, specific issues, more than the overview that you guys provide. So it'll be a nice compliment. So you mm-hmm. talk to you guys, you get the overview of the landscape, and then if you want to dive deeper, you check out these three and their special guests that they're going to have on their shows as well, and they'll be talking more kind of the minutiae and more detail behind things. So, like, you guys will talk about the whole draft. They'll pick, like, three teams and dive into them. So that's right. Kind of the setup of these two shows.
No, it's perfect compliment. I'm very excited. Very excited. Pretty cool.
Chad Campbell had his Vintage Vault previewing up today. John Cena versus Chris Jericho from Vengeance 02 that we talked about earlier. So if you want to get a Chatty Claus's take on everything, you can head over there. New Hard Traveling Fanboys with the rundown for May 2014. All their picks from the world and news from the world of comics over the last month. Todd Gessling completed or moved along with his World Cup preview. I think there's one more to come here. Looking at all the different groups, he did a C&D today with that coming up in Brazil this summer. Jeremy Nichols went inside the House of Horror, looking at From Dusk Till Dawn from 1986. We had a new episode of WrestleNomics Radio with Chris Harrington, looking at MMA Draws, Vince's CEO, and the best wrestling cameos covered as well. We had Stephen Sutton's Honor Report, Ben Morse and Brad Woodling, pinch hitting for Jen Angle, looking at Total Divas Season 3, Week 8. I think there's only one more. Was it last night? I think last night might have been the finale of the season of Total Divas.
I think it's next week.
Is it next week?
I think next week's the finale. Yeah, because they made a big thing about how next week is a finale of Total Divas the same night as Payback.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of weird. But that's because the Kardashians start the week after, so they don't want to make sure one show's gone before the other starts.
I'm going to keep up with them.
Yeah.
Still Real Talk Show was up, episode 223, Jeff Peck and the boys. We had all your usual recaps, Scott Keats, NXT, Petticord, SmackDown, Your Raw. They're all there for you. We had a new episode of new edition of The High Spot with Glenn Butler and Steve Willey looking at the Shikara Eye pay-per-view, Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville, WWE 2K15, and all the other top news of the week. Russell Sellers gave us five reasons to knock it off with the superhero fan battles. And
nice.
Steve Carino, episode 5, had Frankie DeFalco. Mm-hmm. Longtime jobber in the AWA, has his own promotion now. Him and Dan McGinn talked some baseball, talked some Dancing with the Stars, talked about Steve's other stuff he's got going on too in the world of the indies and of Ring of Honor. So make sure you check out episode 5. Already up episode 5 of the Steve Carino Show.
Yes, tremendous.
New episode of The Bauer Show had Stefania Bell of ESPN on, the injury expert.
Injury
to
expert,
yep. Mark Cuban was on. I'm sorry. They talked about Mark Cuban's comments.
Wow, how impressive.
As well, about his recent comments about his own prejudices and bigotries in reaction to Donald Sterling incidents. Mm-hmm. Andrew Waltman debuted here at PlaceToBeNation.com, reviewed the new X-Men movie. I'm looking forward to having him as part of the family. And, of course, we had our last episode with Kevin Kelly last Wednesday, looking at the first half of 2002 in the world wrestling entertainment. So there's your PlaceToBeNation.com update. If you're interested in joining us and writing for us, hit us up at info@PlaceToBeNation.com, Twitter, @PlaceToBeNation, and Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation as well.
Okay. I have a pop culture question for you. Good. Actually, an opinion.
Okay.
All right. Armento, who you saw Saturday.
Oh, yeah. In all his glory.
And Mr. Flanagan was the highlight of his day. he loaned me his HBO Go login. I'm currently watching Boardwalk Empire, tremendous show. So, but I wanted something to counter that because that's obviously very serious drama, shooting, blood. So I ask you, I want to watch one at a time first. I don't want to watch them at the same time. Should I watch
Frasier?
No, I'm already watching that. That's on Hulu. should I watch Curb or Veep? Which one should I watch first? I don't want to watch them concurrently. I want to watch one first and then.
You got to do Curb first.
Okay.
It's going to take you longer. Veep is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I think they're both very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do Curb because I don't know if they even come back. Who knows with them. So might as well watch all those.
Okay.
And then you can go ahead and watch Veep, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. So I will watch. I will start watching. We talked about it.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Is that your new song for Triple H? Toss salads?
toss salads.
I have to edit that
into
the
song. No.
toss salads next to Scotty's bed.
Oh, God.
Scott, check your Skype chat box. I'm going to send you a link.
Okay.
I want you to click it.
Okay. All right. It's opening right now.
So I heard a commercial recently for a business. A commercial for a business located on Armento Street, just in Rhode Island. It was for Rhode Island Beef and Veal.
I was going to say, where they sell GPSs?
I almost shit my pants. I was like, Armento Street. Pretty fantastic.
That's awesome. That's tremendous.
So we'll have to visit there when he comes, yes. comes to Rhode Island someday.
Okay. All right. I love Kelsey Grammer. All right.
We go to the world.
Yes.
Where Tori and Dawn are arguing over the main event and who should have won the Golden Thong Award on SmackDown.
I'm trying to see how long I don't think there's much left for this building. I'm trying to see when it closes.
I think it's 03. Steve Rogers is furiously sending us a message right now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I thought it lasted until 03, didn't it? I don't know. Their wiki page is kind of weird for that. They don't really give much insight.
Okay, because I was looking on there now.
Yeah, I feel like they kind of are all over the place. They don't really give details as to when it switched.
Okay. It says February.
03? Yeah. I thought it was around for a while longer. All right.
Okay. So, we
time
finally...
to play the game!
Great, Kelsey Grammer, a permanent addition now to the place to be. I bet you've never even heard the Frasier song before today.
Of course I have. You think I didn't watch Frasier?
Oh. Actually, honestly, no, I didn't.
Born in 2000?
I didn't think, no, but that didn't seem like your kind of show.
Why?
I don't know. It didn't seem like that sense of humor was catered to the sense of humor you like. It's not very Seinfeldish.
So that's all I can like is Seinfeld because I like Seinfeld?
Based on how I know you and the shows that I know you like, Frasier didn't seem like your type of sense of humor. I'm glad you watched it. I'm not upset.
Why wouldn't it, though? Honestly, because don't I like the smarter comedies? Like, it's kind of in the vein of like a Parks and Rec, a Kurt, you know, like a smarter.
It does and it doesn't, though.
Nah, you know me. I don't like laugh tracky, schlocky sitcoms.
Like, oh, no, you don't like. And I didn't think Frasier was completely, but I didn't think it was. As, like, I always find...
Now, if you said, like, you're watching Will and Grace, I could see you saying that wasn't really my style.
No, that's nobody's style.
I think Frasier, right? Yeah. Yeah, Roz,
okay,
I knew the whole crew.
Okay. Well, you're breaking my balls about it before, so I was sure it wasn't your kind of show, so...
No, it's just funny that you're watching it.
But that I'm watching it? I don't know, I just want to, like...
comedy. Discover shows 15 years after.
15 years later, yeah. Well, I always, like, I just like watching shows, so I don't have to have commercials. That's the only thing I like, but...
Just check out the new show, Frasier. I think it airs on Wii TV. I don't know. Is that what it's on some weird station? Like
I'm watching it on Hulu.
No, I know, but yeah. I'm saying it's on like Lifetime or something.
But when I clicked on, I didn't realize you realize the show was on 11 years.
Yeah, they had a really long run.
They had a really long
run. Was that
run.
Concurrent to Cheers or it started after?
No,
Cheers,
Cheers
right?
ended. No,
right.
Cheers ended, and because as Cheers ended, he divorced Lilith.
Right.
And they stayed in Boston, and he moved to Seattle. So no, it ended. It ended. Cheers ended in May, and Frasier debuted in September.
Yeah.
So it was not concurrent.
Yeah. No. So they were around for a while. So, it was a good show.
Okay. No, I liked it.
Frasier
I'm
and Daphne.
Saying.
I mean, Niles and Daphne got together at the end, right?
In the middle.
Okay, that's right.
Well,
I think they end up together at the end. Sorry, I'm going to spoil it for you.
No, I already know they do. I already know they do.
Did Frasier end up with Roz? No, he ends up with some other chick, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't think he ends up with Roz. I love Roz. She's my favorite. Sean, too. She's a great actress. Exceptional comedy actress. Yes. But she is very pretty. I'm not
very
a Jane
good,
Leaves
good
fan,
comedic,
though.
Huh?
I'm not a Jane Leaves fan, though.
No? Well, I thought she'd be right up your alley, the Brit.
I do like, yes, I do like the actress. That is quite true. But I like the fact that the funny thing was is everyone on the show thought Niles was gay, but he obviously wasn't because he loved Daphne in real life. David Hyde Pierce is. I just thought that was very funny.
Hilarious.
But good show. But I'm only like, I don't know, 8 episodes into season 1. But when I clicked on it, I'm like, wow, 11 years. Crazy. All right. Anyway, back to the
Baby, I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Oh, God. All right. So we're finally closing up the storyline throughout the show of Eric Bischoff wanting Triple H very badly for Raw, and he thought he had the inside track because he assumed that you know Triple H would not want to work with his now ex-wife on SmackDown.
Yep.
So Triple H comes out to one of my favorite of his T-shirts, which I did own. And that's the one that had the big cross in the front and the back. It said, screw the rules, play the game.
The one he left the night of the – well, maybe they mean like toss salad at night and the scrambled eggs in the morning. Maybe that's the story.
And extra T-shirts in the morning.
I hear the pedigree calling. Give him a toss salad and eat some scrambled eggs.
Oh, God.
So Bischoff comes out, tries to apologize. He gives him the hard sell, promises movie deals and everything else. Stephanie comes out. Kind of weird, I thought, seeing her as a serious businesswoman after she was such a bitch over the last year.
I know.
Stephanie sells the personal knowledge of Triple H, brings up Eric Bischoff's past WCW comments about him. Very long segment. Hunter takes a shot at both of them. He's about to pick SmackDown, but Michaels comes out. A very interesting time for Michaels. You mentioned this too. Not really in the Jesus mode yet.
No.
But
no,
not...
when he walked out, he had that like that Shawn look. I'm like, oh, I think I'm gonna like this. Like the Shawn of 98.
Right. You kinda have the DX and almost like the 99 commissioner stuff more.
Yes. Yep.
Kind of that swagger behind it. Again, very long filler. For one guy deciding to go to a show. But yes. Michaels reminds his comments about bringing Hunter home to the NWO, but said Vince ended it. So he says, why don't you come to Raw? We'll torture Bischoff. We'll be buddies. We can circle jerk around and make fun of everyone. And Hunter chooses Raw. Stephanie's pissed. Bischoff gloats. Hunter and HBK leave together, pose on the ramp, and then Stephanie talks Bischoff after he shit-talks her in the ring. I thought it was a good story. It made sense, but way too long. Just way
incredibly
too long.
Yeah, way too long.
Especially for one guy going. I mean, they kind of cut this thing in half. But the story would take a very interesting turn the next night on Raw, which we'll cover next week.
Yes, it would. Indeed.
But there you go. For now, the Click is looking to party on Raw and take over the show.
Boy, that would have been great. Oh, yeah. Having the Click together.
And then we get more overkill backstage. Rikishi, Booker, and Goldust all comment on Hunter going to Raw. This felt like, you know, Scott Keith and some of the internet people at the time always joked about Nash being like Poochie from The Simpsons, where, you know, if Poochie's on a screen, you have to talk about Poochie. Like, that was the number one rule. And that was kind of like Nash's line of thinking in 98. Like, whenever he wasn't on camera, you had to talk about him. Dusty Rhodes in 88, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he wasn't on, you still had everyone commenting about him. Like, I wish Dusty Rhodes best of luck at his title chase. Now talk about my feud.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like here. Oh, we all got to talk about Hunter going to Raw. Like, that's the big topic everyone has to comment on.
Yeah. Yeah, very weird. Definitely overkill. Yeah. I totally agree with that. But the Shawn thing was the more fascinating thing. I hate to say it, but I almost feel like Hunter got overshadowed. Because this is the first, we saw him on Raw with the NWO shirt on, all that crap. But this was the first time since coming back that we really were starting to think, what's going on here? He looks good. Looks like he's in shape. What's going on here? There's more to this than meets the eye. before that, I thought he was just futzing around, and we knew he was running the wrestling school and all that kind of jazz, and he always going to be in the NWO and kind of be in skits and whatever. Maybe they'll bring back Heartbreak Hotel or some jazz like that. But this was the first segment where I started to think to myself, what's going on here? There's more to this than meets the eye. That's what I was thinking at the time. Is he back? No. Is he really back?
Well, it almost seemed like he was going to maybe manage him in a way.
Yeah.
Like he was going to manage Triple H. That's where I thought they were headed with it.
Almost kind of like Piper and Orndorff.
Yeah.
When Piper first came in 1984. Like, you're like, you knew he was a wrestler, but he was, you know, actually.
And he had been managing the NWO, so it didn't seem that out of the realm.
Mm. I still felt, you still felt, though, that something's up. Not sure what, but I'm gonna roll with this and see what happens. I agree with you. The whole managing thing made perfect sense throughout most of that June run when he was, or late May, early June when he was in the whole NWO. But this segment made me think something different. Like,
yeah,
something's going on. Something's going on, and I know there was no.
I didn't think it was going to happen.
Well, they kept things under wraps back then, though, because
right. Yeah.
We didn't. There was nothing on the internet about Sean actually wrestling again. Not at all.
I think there may be rumors about where they were headed, but I don't think what it would become was rumored.
Mm. So Sean makes Hunter change his mind because Hunter was going to go to SmackDown to be with the devil he knows instead of the devil he doesn't know. But eventually he would change his mind thanks to Shawn Michaels, and Hunter is on Raw, which I kind of. Did you kind of know that anyway?
Yeah, obviously. Oh, they wanted to get him away from Stephanie, too.
Yeah. Hunter was going to be on the live show, not the taped show. So. And actually. And scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe is it making you want to watch it again?
I got too much to watch as it is.
There is.
Sorry, there's that was definite- awful. I sound like those people that I hate. They're like, TV? I don't got time for TV. I'm so busy. I can't watch TV. I fucking hate those people with a passion. Mm. Shut up, assholes.
There's just nothing on right now. Everything I'm watching now. I mean, the only things that are on now.
No,
are-
it's fine. Watch Frasier. I'm on other things. I have nothing wrong with you watching old shows.
Okay.
I hate the people that are like, do you watch The Americans? Oh, I wish I had time to watch TV. What the fuck are you doing?
No.
I'm not saying that's you. I'm saying I sounded like the people that talk like that when I made fun of you when I said I don't have time for Frasier.
Oh.
So defensive.
Oh. Schmuck. No.
My point is, I hate the people that say that when you say, do you watch a show, and they act like it's insane that you even have time to ever watch TV.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
It drives me insane.
No,
you're just
right.
Not managing your life correctly if that's, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. My situation more is I just hate commercials.
No,
so
it's
I wait
fine.
Till shows end. You know,
yep.
So that's why I'm glad.
Watch Frasier and enjoy your toast salad.
And Jesus, do you realize I'm going to be in a restaurant now? I'm like, what would you like with your? I think I'll have the. And I'm not even going to be able to say it now.
Have you ever ordered a toss? I don't think I've ever ordered a toss salad.
Well, I like, do you want the salad? I won't say toss, but I'll say, like, do you want the salad? I'm going to think of not you. It won't even be Kelsey Grammer singing. It'll be you singing it. Toss salad and pedigrees. No.
On your mattress without a frame.
Eyes without a face. Okay. So there you go. Triple H is on Raw.
All right, next match. Let's go.
So, all right. Let's get back to in-ring. Our next match. In fact, our last two matches, JR, both championship matches. This one for the tag team titles. And of course, as you know, as we talked about earlier, your tag team champions, the very fun team of Edge and Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Was this when Edge would cut the promo in the mirror? And I think Hogan was behind him. I wonder if that was before or after. Hogan puts the t-shirt on. It might have been after. But he cuts the like Hoganish promo in the mirror to himself, and Hogan walks up behind him, and you think he's mad, but he shakes his hand. So,
June 6th SmackDown, Scott,
mm-hmm.
Billy and Chuck got the titles back from Rikishi and Rico in an elimination tag match. Rico submitted to a wrist lock from Chuck 25 seconds into the match, leaving Rikishi to defend the titles by himself. Rikishi eliminated Billy, but Chuck won him back by pinning Rico. Rikishi after Rico nailed him with a spin kick, and Billy pushed Rikishi's foot off the ropes. This marked the 10th and final reign for Billy Gunn Oh, that's like wrong now. He had his 11th this year.
Yes, marked his 10th and to date.
Right.
Final reign, but not final. His 10th reign for Billy Gunn.
On the July 4th SmackDown, as I mentioned, Hulk Hogan came out to be Edge's partner. Defeated Billy and Chuck, first time using Real American since King of the Ring 93, and also his first time holding the tag team championship. Now, Scott, tell us their opponents.
Their opponents were this growing faction, if you will, of anti-American sentiment. Actually, more pro-Canadian sentiment, and yes, that is the team of Christian, who you and I, JR, had been saying was, you know, needed something, and this was a great recovery after the whole DDP feud. And a guy who kind of came out of nowhere, because we hadn't really seen much of him over time, and that was Lance Storm. I was pumped about this team because it was nice to see Lance Storm doing something. You knew Christian was going to be around, but it was nice to see Lance Storm doing something. So they weren't called what they would eventually be called yet.
Right. They're the anti-Americans.
They're the anti-Americans. We'll give them. We'll let you know their actual name at our next vault.
And they kind of foreshadowed it at King of the Ring. If you remember, Lance Storm and Christian kind of put their plan into action backstage. Officially formed, and Storm publicly claimed that WWE had been discriminating against Canadians for years, citing the Montreal Screwjob to back up his claim. His occasional tag partner Christian and fellow Canadian Test joined the stable as well. As indicated by their name, they differed from the predecessors like the Hart Foundation and WCW's Team Canada in that they were anti-American, not just pro-Canadian. Mm-hmm. As a result of this, they began carrying an American flag flown upside down instead of a Canadian flag, as that's known as the National Distress Signal, of course, when the flag is upside down.
Yes.
Storm and Christian are assisted here by Jericho, another Canadian. Jericho was on the proposed match of Vince McMahon and subsequently helped them win the match when he has Edge with one of the belts. Jericho did not formally join the stable. He had only helped due to being embroiled in a feud with Edge. According to Storm, the original plan was to have the four Canadians form a group called C4, but those plans were scrapped and changed to this scenario instead.
I think that would have been cool.
It's funny, because for a while, I wasn't completely tuned into SmackDown, and I always thought they were just forming a Team Canada, and this guy I worked with, the Stop and Shop, used to always tell me how it was like the anti-Americans, and I kept like it was sticking with Team Canada, because I was sure that's where they were going. Mm. So as a result, I ended up not liking the anti-America thing, because I thought it would have been cooler if they were Team Canada again. This would have made more sense, since they didn't have any, you know, non-Canadian guys. They were all Canadian, so kind of annoyed me at the time. But
I liked them. But I thought C4 would have been really cool. Mm. I think that would have been kind of neat. Not a bad match. Right around 10 minutes. Hogan again brought his boots. And, you know, and this is a situation. JR and the opponents were getting tougher in the generational sense. I mean, he's worked with Rock.
Yeah, they're a lot
Triple
younger.
H, Taker. Three guys who can kind of go with the same style as Hogan. But now you've dealt with Angle. And now two guys who aren't even close to the way Hogan works.
Right.
And Hogan's got to keep up. And he did.
Yeah, it was cool seeing him as tag champ, too.
Yeah, it was very cool seeing him holding the tag belt. And he was playing it as a guitar like he used to do the WCW belt. But it was nice for this match to see him adapt to them instead of them having to slow down for him.
Oh, yeah.
That was the key.
And the anti-American stock clearly rising, too. They're becoming a legitimate force here. Mm-hmm. New music, a good spot for two underrated guys that really needed some direction. Again, cool seeing Hogan mix in with different guys. The big pops continue. Jim Ross was a disaster in this match. He kept mixing up WrestleMania 3 and 6, and then he said WrestleMania 3 was in Chicago, and he was all over the place.
Yeah, he was a shit show. That was not good. I don't know what that was about, but
I was glad to see Storm in the mix. Hogan got some early spots in. Edge and Christian feel so different than they did at the end of 01. Doesn't it feel like they weren't even a team? Like, they feel like completely different guys in this match. Like, they barely even discussed their past at all.
Yeah, they say, they talk about how they're brothers. But JR says it so, or King says it to JR, like, you know, JR, they're brothers. No shit. Because you weren't here, Jerry, last year when they were feuding over the Intercontinental title. You're a day late and a dollar short.
Right.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
so
the whole thing is kind of weird.
It was pretty stupid.
I thought it was a pretty compressed formula action. It felt like it was going to be a longer formula match, but they're kind of, it almost felt like a Saturday Night's main event match that was always kind of sped up. They had two short double heat segments, one on Edge, one on Hogan. Hogan takes a super kick on the floor after a leg drop pin got broken. Hogan, like you said, Scott, really moving with the younger guys, keeping up with their pace. They're not having to slow down for him. Ref gets bumped. Test comes in, wipes out Edge, but Edge kicks out. Rikishi comes out, runs off Test. Then Jericho helps, and we get the new champs. I thought the title change made a lot of sense, pushed the new faction. Edge and Hogan were a cool little transitional, fun little run. But a good use of the solid mid-card. I like this change, and I was on board with it.
I was, too. It was nice for Hogan to have Hogan an edge to have that little 15-day or what was it, July 4th? And so, yeah, 17-day run was fun. You know, gave Edge kind of like a dream of his, you know, being at WrestleMania 3 in Cleveland, JR was talking about. Yeah, it was very cool. But now we need to get the tag division some legit stability. And so giving it to a good heel team like Christian and Storm was a tremendous idea. And it helped both guys because both guys needed it. Christian was kind of not knowing what was going on with him after the feud with DDP back in the spring. And Jesus, Lance Storm hadn't been on in ages.
Right.
So it was big for both of them. So definitely the right way to go about it here. You didn't want Edge stuck. No, with no disrespect to Hogan, you didn't want Edge stuck with another tag team. You know, he was on a good roll as a solo guy. You didn't stick him with a tag team again. This was just a nice little, you know, almost like a reward for Edge. Like Hogan could have teamed with anybody on the babyface side, and they chose Edge to be with him. You know, and that was pretty cool. I think that was kind of a reward for Edge for having such a good first half of the year, good matches with Kurt. I think that was the key. So, but the anti-Americans, Lance Storm and Christian, are your new WWE Tag Team Champions.
We head all backstage right. Again.
Yes.
Eric Bischoff attempting to talk to Kurt Angle about jumping to Raw. Stephanie joins the fun and tells Eric she'll win the war and that she's in contact with Bischoff's entire roster. So she claims that she'll rip the heart out of Raw very soon. So a little foreshadowing there. Very, very angry Stephanie who lost Triple H earlier in the night. And now It is main event time.
It is now time for our main event. And the undisputed championship is on the line. Your champion, as Vince always likes to call him. Well, I almost jumped ahead of myself. Your champion is The Undertaker. And, of course, he has been champion since stability there, JR, winning the title at Judgment Day and has had it for, a couple months, taking on The Rock, which was kind of irritating because, you know, where does he get off getting a title shot?
I know. That really annoyed me here.
Yeah. And, and
the Buick sounds like it needs a new speaker. It's kind of hurting.
That was off my phone. I didn't have my iPad in front of me. The situation here. Now, your boy was coming off beating Hogan at King of the Ring.
Yep.
And when we left King of the Ring, JR, we thought that the triple threat main event was going to be Undertaker, The Rock, and Triple H. That's what it seemed like anyway. But then, of course, all this other rigmarole happened over the next few weeks. And so let us know how your boy got into this match.
Well, The Undertaker was not very happy with The Rock after he ran his interference on the title match at King of the Ring. The match was originally supposed to be one-on-one between two men, as made official by Vince McMahon. On July 4th, SmackDown, Kurt Angle challenged Undertaker for the Undisputed title. The match ended in a draw when Taker tapped out as he pinned Angle while Kurt had him trapped at a triangle choke. The next week, Vince added Angle to the match, meaning Taker could not lose his title without being defeated. And as our good friend Stephen Sutton notes, the ending of that match on TV is believed to be from the Matt Hughes-Carlos Newton fight at UFC 34 High Voltage that happened on November 2nd, 2001. A similar finish, I guess. So there's rumors that that's where they took it from.
Kind of like the whole, what was it, Sid hit Sean and Jose Lothario with the camera from the 96 Survivor Series, which they stole from November to Remember the Night Before, or whatever the heck it was. What were your thoughts on kind of shoehorning Kurt in this match? I mean, obviously you were very happy, but what'd you think, you know, logistically? Did it fit? Did it
work? I didn't think the whole match fit. I mean, I knew it was going to be good in the ring, but I didn't understand why Rock was right back getting a title shot. That made no sense. And I mean, Angle, I thought, He came off the win with Hogan. He lost to Edge. I thought he needed a little rehab. I thought they needed to make SmackDown look like they had a really good top challenger. So I was okay with it. He had fought Taker to a draw, so I thought he earned it, at the least.
Common sense-wise, or logic-wise, there was only one reason to put Rock in this match. And that was the guy that was standing backstage that was waiting for his title shot at SummerSlam.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, backstage, it made sense. I'm talking on TV, kayfabe-wise.
In a bubble, right.
It made no sense for Rock to come back here, walk in, and get this title shot. Mm. It was cool to see him back, but I don't know if he needed to be in the... They could have done it. Well, the problem is he came back like a month too late. Like, it would have been cool if him and Kurt had like a number one contenders match here, but you had to get the belt on him. I get it, so...
Right. And then you don't want to give... I mean, you couldn't do it in June, because then you lose that Kurt Hogan moment. I think Kurt needed that, so... This match is a lot of fun. And I think what we all love about it, and we were talking about this, JR, when we set up our future episode of Create a Card when we do July and August, this match definitely goes into that very short group of great July title matches. Mm-hmm. I think the guy that deserves the most credit here is Taker. He was bringing the goods. He got out of the malaise of the invasion, which I still think he just hated that storyline. I think that's why he sleptwalked through it. And now he's champion, and he's been really solid. The King of the Ring match was but he had the great match with Jeff Hardy, and now here he is working with two solid guys, and I really think he brought so much energy here. I think it's very infectious. I think I think Taker getting some... getting his engine running is a direct result of Hogan's engine running. I think Hogan brought so much to the locker room in 2002, it's not even funny. I really think it was a key thing, and now he's getting these, and now these older guys, the Takers, really were like, wow, you know, Hogan came back and everybody thought he was a douche, but this guy's busted his ass. And I think he's trying to prove that he isn't a political, you know, mover and shaker who gets what he wants just by, you know, doing whatever. And so I think everybody rolled with it. What do you think of that theory?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, when you see that top guy working hard and busting his ass, it, like you said, it becomes infectious for sure. This is a lot of star power in this one, Scott.
So, oh, yeah.
Three big names. Star-studded, a huge pop for The Rock. We've come a long way from 2 years earlier at the July pay-per-view with Undertaker and Kurt Angle. A little different.
Oof, yeah.
Angle much more on an even plane now. And Taker, obviously, in a completely different spot mentally and physically. All three flying around early. Taker takes the first bump, and he's out first. And we get a Kurt Angle suplex fiesta on The Rock. Angle's next out in the rotation, and Taker relishes to slowly pounding on The Rock, slowing things down a bit. Rock hits a choke slam on Taker. Then we get a rock bottom from Kurt onto Rock. And then Taker hits an angle slam on Kurt. So we get the trio. They all swap moves.
Yes.
None of them finish. And then Rock goes out of the match, and we get Taker and Kurt going at it. They're trading bombs. Kurt bleeds. Taker was really, like you said, the steadying force in this match. Was methodical in picking apart the other guys while Kurt and Rock kept trying to sprint. We get a ref bump, and Angle bashes Taker with a chair, hits an angle slam of Rock. We get a flurry of good near fall teases, kept getting broken up by the other guy. Angle and Taker do a redo of their TV finish with the double hold, but it's a great battle as Taker picks up Kurt and slams him, but Kurt holds on. The crowd is going bonkers at the end here for all the near fall, especially when Rock hits a rock bottom on Taker. Tons of big moves, finishes all over the place. Rock finishes on Kurt. Rock bottom finishes. Rock finishes with the rock bottom on Kurt. And Taker misses the save at the last time. Good payoff to all the saves because Taker just barely misses it. That was the whole build to the finish that they kept saving
right. The
other guy. Red hot match, really good chemistry, a fun main event with a lot of intrigue. Taker's reign has been fine. I thought he deserved it for all the hard work as well. Scott, in your mind, was this the best triple threat to date from this company?
I think so. Considering the different types of workers in the ring, I thought this was a culmination of what was a really great Detroit crowd that night. They were hot from beginning to end. We hadn't really mentioned it much tonight, but the Joe crowd in Hockey Town was off the charts on this night. From the beginning, I felt like even going back to that Bubba Ray Spike versus Benoit Eddie. They were crackling, and I think they really hit hit it here. I mean, they're just insane during this match, and I think the three guys fed off that, and just all those finishes and just very frenetic. I think Kurt is good at that. I think Kurt, over these last couple of years since he debuted, has done a fantastic job of adapting to the way that this kind of frenetic style of a match goes. I think he did a great job of keeping that pace going with all the false finishes. But if you look back at triple threats, particularly main events, what was our last one? I guess the year before, Austin, Benoit, Jericho, I suppose.
Yeah, it's better than that.
And it's better than that one.
It was really good. It kind of changed the mold of WWF triple threats.
Yeah, I agree. And then we end up having another good one a year later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
And the final taker of pay-per-view match is a heel, Scott. From here on out, he's always a face.
He'll be a baby face from here on out. Absolutely.
Yep. We'll talk more about that at SummerSlam, which is where Rock moves on to. Again, made sense, but still feels kind of weird that he walked in and got the title. Felt very Hoganish in a way.
Yes, it did.
Old school Hoganish. Overall, Scott, this is a fun show. Some filler, but good matches. Again, forgotten, but everyone worked hard. We had a good crowd and a nice July show. July often had kind of the filler shows to date, but this was one that had more happenings than most July shows.
Yes. No, definitely a show. If you have time to kill at home, pop up the network, click it. You won't be disappointed. It was a good 2.5 hour.
Yep.
2.5 hour show to enjoy. Be very surprised.
So how do you feel about things heading into SummerSlam?
I'm looking forward to having Brock Lesnar in that spot. I'm telling you, the whole thing for me right now is Shawn. He's the wild card here. What's the scoop? Because right now you don't know what are they going to do with Triple H? Does he get another one-on-one match with Taker? There's a lot of intrigue right now because you have at least one match set for SummerSlam at the moment. And you have The Rock, who's going to defend the title against Brock Lesnar. That's set in stone. Other than that, what the hell's going on? You have, there's rumored debuts. You got Rey Mysterio coming in.
Where's Hogan going?
Talked about.
That's the question,
Hogan
too.
Going?
Where's he fit into all this?
Yeah. A lot of enigma.
Does Bischoff, when do we finalize the jumping between the shows? When does that get locked up?
Yeah,
a lot of questions heading into SummerSlam.
Yeah, there are a lot of... we're still in a... creatively, we are definitely JR in a big state of flux. Not quite sure what's going on. A lot of transition still. And that's what makes this year so unique. A wrestling year, 2002. A lot of enigmas, a lot of... We keep using these words, enigma, flux, transition, because that's a lot of what it is. Kind of things floating in the air, and it's continuing. And we've got SummerSlam has been on a roll. We haven't had a bad, I shouldn't say bad, we haven't had a less than great SummerSlam since 1996. We've had, what, 4 in a row?
Yep.
5 in a row, really, 97 through 2001, all great. So they got a bit of a rep to protect here, and right now we're not sure what they're thinking about. But obviously, the next night on Raw and the next couple of SmackDowns, you start to see where they're going. They start to make some huge moves and where guys are going to be laid out. So I was excited, but I was puzzled. And really, for me, the whole thing at this moment was Shawn. There's a reason he's here, and it's not just to walk around and be funny. Something else is going on. So we'll see. Where does he go? But again, very good show here. If you got time to kill and you have the network, pop it on. Not going to be disappointed. Salads and scrambled eggs. Never get disappointed with that either.
So that brings it into our show, Vengeance 02. Scott, we'll be back. That's it for us this week. We have an episode of the main event. Who do you have on? What's going on this week?
The Core Four will return only for the reason that we will have our payback preview. Might do a little indie stuff this week too, JR. Some surprises.
Oh, look at that. Maybe we'll actually hear from Steve Willey this week.
Yeah, Steve Willey will actually talk, and Andrew Reach will pass the oxygen tank to him. But we'll most definitely do a payback preview. So that's one of the key things we'll have this week.
Cool. We'll also have the Kevin Kelly show.
Yes. What's the Kevin Kelly show have on tap?
We have Sean Grandy, play-by-play man for the Boston Celtics, and a huge wrestling historian and fan. He'll be on with us. I'm sure we'll talk payback as well. We're going to continue. Kevin did pretty well in his because he watches no TV of WWE. But he does predictions now. We did Extreme Rules. He got 6 out of 8. So now we'll see how he does predicting payback. We'll be talking all the news of the week. I'm sure we'll talk some Ring of Honor, some trending stories, read you Twitter questions, all the fun. And, of course, tune in later this week for the Steve Corino show as well. And all the other accoutrement going on at PlayStation Nation.com. We'll be back next Monday, SummerSlam 02. And next Wednesday, Scott, I'm so excited, we'll be back watching Raw, episode 3 and 4.
Yes.
We'll have Campbell. We'll have more sets.
Willie.
We'll all be back here to chat the next episode of Raw from 1993. Next two. I believe we have the Flair Perfect Loser Leaves Town match on tap.
Yes, we do. That's the first episode. Yep.
All right. That's Scott. I'm Justin. We'll talk to you next Monday with SummerSlam. Until then, everyone take care. And make sure you listen to Extra Point, where two guys in a, you know, in a group that honors Christopher Columbus talking about Native American racial issues. Can't go wrong with that.
Exactly. And scrambled eggs.
Yes.
And number crunch. Well, that's the other show.
Yes.
Cost salads and number crunching.
They're making me ya-ya, your salads and scrambled eggs.